Hi everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology. Today we're going to take a look at the Sun's upcoming conjunction to Neptune and focus in a little bit on that dynamic, which will be perfecting in the sky over the course of about the next week. Give you a few thoughts on that. Also wanted to do a little follow-up on Saturn-Uranus, who are just now separating from their initial square, which is coming back in June. So I want to talk a little bit about that today as well. I'm going to put the real-time clock up and show you what we're looking at first, give you the timeline. So you can see here that the Sun is coming into a conjunction with Neptune. Now, this is going to take place over the course of the next week. You're going to see the two of them come together here. The Sun is moving on to the 20th degree right about March 10th, which is next Wednesday. And between the 10th and the 11th, we'll perfect that right before we've also got a new moon coming through. So this, you could say, is already starting to, you can already start to feel this in the sky. The Sun is moving to within about, you know, within the next day here, it's moving to within about 5 degrees. For the Sun, I tend to give it about 5 degrees on either side. 3 degrees is the technical engagement range, but I always start noticing, transits a little early, maybe because I'm a little bit more sensitive to them now. And I've heard other people say that as well, who listen to my channel, that, you know, you might feel the transits somewhat early before they come. And one thing that we should say is that, you know, astrological transits are like moving weather patterns. You know, you have, if you think the example I use is the full moon. When I worked as a social worker with adult schizophrenics at a Franciscan residence home in New York City, the full moons were always times where there was a higher rate of like decompensations for our clients, and they would have, you know, often more acute like mental, spiritual health episodes. And but you know, you're looking at it like the day before, 2 days before the full moon, 2 days after the full moon. It was never like, well, the full moon is tonight, and so, you know, someone maybe had to go to the emergency room or something like that. It was a very broad spectrum that sort of took place in a kind of orb around the event of the full moon, right? And that's how astrological transits are in general. We experience astrological transits, and the energies that are coming through tend to seize or grip us and pull us along according to our karma and our destiny path within a range. So astrologers have talked about the range differently over 2,000 years, you know, different degrees that are associated with the aspects that planets are making and so forth. You can start feeling these things, you know, usually I would say about 3 or 4 degrees away from perfection for most planets by degree-based aspect, but ancient astrologers also used whole sign aspects as well, which is a whole different topic. So for some people, you're going to feel it as early as a planet, you know, moving into a new sign, what to speak of it perfecting by degree. And again, I've noticed that the ability to feel these things is pretty much depends on, you know, how much you've cultivated the practice of self-reflection. Are you someone who is paying attention to the transits regularly? Those things tend to heighten and increase sensitivity or awareness of the transits. Not that it makes you have any greater control over them necessarily. It's just you might become aware of them a little bit earlier. Anyway, I'd love to hear all of your experiences with this kind of thing. I know some people are very sensitive. Some people, you know, are also not necessarily going to feel something. It's like, it's sort of selective. It's like sometimes I feel them and sometimes I don't. And why is that? And one explanation is because these transits are also interacting with our birth charts. And, you know, not all, you know, it's almost like you go outside, like right now today in Minneapolis, it's sunny outside. It's really nice. Snow is melting everywhere, right? So, so for some people, that sunny spring melty energy is going to be particularly potent today. It's going to be a part of the story of their day, and it really marks something in their day. For other people, it's not. You know, it might be a week from now on a sunny day. That you see what I mean? So spring is going to be felt differently by different people on different days. Same thing with the astrological transit. You have a season of astrological weather that spanned out across the general amount of time. And within that range, typically you're going to feel or notice the manifestation of the energies. Anyway, that's just a little digression, I guess, but hopefully it's useful. So for about the next week, you should be able to start feeling the sun coming into conjunction with Neptune. Now, the other thing to mention right now is that, you know, if you listen to astrology regularly, there's a lot of different transits. Like today, we also have Mercury and Jupiter perfecting their conjunction. And I talked about that in a video earlier this week. Mars just ingressed into Gemini. You heard me talk about Mars's ingress into Gemini this week. So, you know, there's this myth that there exists some perfect interpretation of all factors in the sky all at once and what they should mean for you. that's not true at all. Just in the same way that everything that's happening, you know, let's say everything that's happening in my neighborhood on any given day is not necessarily going to have a direct impact on me, but some of it could. So a lot of that depends on the birth chart and individual destiny. But still, it's good to know, you know, one of the goals of this channel and my work and astrology in general, and if you're a student of astrology, your goal should be to understand what different kinds of weather fronts karmically and energetically are coming through at what time so that you can participate in them more consciously. By that, we mean that you're not just getting pulled like by the puppet strings of energies that, you know, we're pretending like we're in control of. Most of the time, that's what we're doing until we cultivate an inner life. So at any rate, all of that is just to say that we can look at the sun and Neptune in isolation from everything else that's going on. And that, to me, is usually the most helpful, because if you kind of have a little bit of a compartmentalized awareness of each different transit that's happening, you're going to notice them and how they are working together or how they're overlapping with one another a little bit better than trying to tell one overly literalized story about how they all work together. And you tend to find astrologers doing that when they're like, we're all going through this. We're all experiencing that. It's been like this for everyone lately. Well, no, it's not. The transits are not, they can be looked at in isolation. You can look at one transit and deeply, for some people, will recognize or experience that one even while there's several others playing out. So it's important to say that as well, because I get questions all the time being like, well, how do I make sense of all three or four of these transits happening at once? And it's like, you don't have to. Just be aware of each of them individually and then pay attention and notice what comes up. You know, we're not trying to control anything. We're just trying to stay aware. At any rate, okay, so my rants are over for the day. So we've got the sun coming into the conjunction with Neptune, and that's going to be perfecting over the course of the next week. Even a late next week, you'll see the sun pulling away from that as the new moon energy has pushed through. And, you know, I'd say even the next 10 days, you could feel this. So that's the main thing to talk about. Now, the other thing that you'll notice is that Saturn is just about to move into getting close to a full degree away from the square to Uranus. Well, that square to Uranus is in effect, it's still just because they're separate doesn't mean that the transit is over. It's sort of like saying 3 hours after the full moon, is the full moon over? Well, no, you know what I mean? So, all right. So Saturn will fully get out of that 3 degree range. Yeah, we're looking at probably, what is it? Sorry, here we go. Starting to get out of it by April. Like, you know, you can see here, it's still about a little over 2 degrees away by the beginning of April. And we want it to see it about 3 degrees away. And you're not going to get a lot of distance outside of 3 degrees this year. So here they are pulling, you know, still just about 3 degrees away by mid-April, right? And then you can see here they're, you know, just over 2 degrees away. So they're staying in that range. The point of telling you this is that they're staying close within that range of 3 degrees all the way up until Saturn stations, slows down stations, which is going to happen by end of May, and then retrogrades. So in other words, imagine that you're in a day, it's the full moon, right? And then imagine that after the full moon, as the energy of the full moon is waning, you're still like 3 hours away from the full moon. So it's like starting to come down a little bit, but then the moon were to stop and go back to being full. That's what we're in with Saturn Uranus. So someone emailed me and said, hey, there's been all of this, like the plates have been moving around. There's been all of this amazingly increased earthquake activity. I think it's in Iceland or something, or maybe it's all over the world. I haven't really looked at the news. But I thought that the Saturn Uranus square was over. And so what, like, is that just like an aftershock, or is it still in effect, or like what's going on? And I was like, well, it'd be a good moment to stop and let everybody know that that just because Saturn has passed the square to Uranus by degree, again, for me as a practitioner looking at what ancient astrologers said, within 3 degrees, right? So it doesn't really get out of that 3 degree range between now and like later in the summer, right? So it's not a it's not a transit. We're in the full moon of Saturn square Uranus, like for a good portion of this year, even if the exact moments often bring really acute manifestations of the energy. They can happen just as much as you or I could be inspired to dance or maybe lose our minds a little bit, you know, a couple hours after the full moon. So yes, we are still very much in the range of Saturn Uranus activity, where the sudden disruption of structures, traditions, innovation, or reforming or revisioning of existing structures or traditions, the tower card energy, all of that's in the air, you know, through the summer. It's just that the acute, one of the acute moments has sort of passed us by already, but then it's still within the range. And then it's like, again, it's like the full moon, it's starting to fade, but then it comes back. And so it never really leaves full moon peak period. Okay. So that was one of the reasons why I also wanted to talk a little bit about aspects and when you can feel astrological energies. And so, and in any time within that range, you may notice the manifestations of Saturn Uranus events in your life. So that means this year is sort of a Saturn Uranus year. So that's how you should think about it. And for me, always the peak moments are the hard aspects of the moon cycle: new moon, first and last quarter moons, and full moons, especially full moons. New moon, we're coming down on the moon cycle right now, heading into a last quarter moon. And so there's a season of completion over the next few days. And then this sense of new beginning that will come through that's highly Neptunian and embodies this Sun-Neptune dynamic that we're going to talk about now. Okay. So what is there to say about the Sun and Neptune? First of all, remember that the sun was associated with that which motivates us toward a higher ideal. Just like the sun rises in the morning and goes up to the top of the sky and then sets, it gives you the picture of like a narrative arc. So what is motivating our action? What gets us out of bed in the morning? What compels us to act? What are we intending toward? What is our sense of ambition and action and direction in life? And behind that is an ideal image of some kind. In this material world, that could be fame or money or power or authority or, you know, legacy or popularity. I mean, all different kinds of things that people get totally deluded by. And, you know, that you and me are also, you know, none of us are above it, right? But so the sun, as in, you know, as in Platonic philosophy, is also going to be connected to the ideal forms or the thoughts in the mind of God or something of the nature of divinity. So when the sun and Neptune come together, you're thinking about the way that one's actions, ambitions, ideals, and desires in a worldly sense are going to be, they're going to be fused with Neptunian qualities. Or you're thinking about the way in which you know, let's just say someone who has a spiritual practice is often going to receive wisdom or insights or understanding about higher truth that is also Neptunian in nature. So that then that begs the question, well, how does the sun get Neptunized? What does that mean? One of my favorite books of all time, which I'm reading to my oldest daughter, Gigi, right now, is The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. If you ever want to read a book that is so deeply Neptune sun-like, read The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. It was actually intentionally by C.S. Lewis infused with the astrological symbolism of the sun. And of course, the ship is called the Dawn Treader. And one of the characters, Reepicheep, who's a little mouse, has it in his mind to sail to the edge of the Eastern Sea, which is Aslan or God's country, where the, toward the place of the rising sun. One of the things that comes through in this story is about the difference between gold and true, like material gold and spiritual gold. And this is a big part of Neptune and the sun. There's a kind of fool's gold image or theme that comes with Neptune and the sun. We become inspired by a sort of transcendental longing when Neptune and the sun come together, and it either goes in one of two directions, and often it's mixed. One direction is going to be, I become possessed by the longing for some kind of ideal. It's going to motivate my action, and it feels like transcendental or otherworldly. I feel like I'm being lifted or carried by something. Almost like, for example, I don't know if any of you guys ever saw the show Vikings. This is something that I started years ago, and then I finally just, I had like a little bit left to go to finish it, so I finally just decided to finish it. And no spoilers, but there is a part where the Vikings encounter gold in a new world, and there's a kind of fever that one of the Vikings gets for gold. Like he gets possessed by this like lust for gold. Now, gold can take many forms. We're not talking about literal gold. We're talking about that thing that promises richness, that thing that is glamorous, the thing that sparkles with some kind of numinous power, intoxicates, captures the imagination, and takes us off onto a fool's quest. We lose our mind. We become possessed, as it were, by some kind of longing, almost like a siren song or something like that. And the Neptune, remember, the sun was associated with the ninth house traditionally, which was called, the house was called God, and it was called the joy of the sun. And it was associated with the like courts of law, and it was associated with divination and almost like the laws of the cosmos, of the decrees of the gods, the study of astrology, mysticism. And so, you know, on the other hand, the sun with Neptune can appear at that moment where we find our teacher or a teacher, where we find a path of some kind that speaks to us. This is the way through this valley of shadows. This is the way through the world. And it could be an image that becomes the image of a soulful path. It doesn't have to be necessarily a religious calling. It could be almost like an artistic inspiration or an image that we feel compelled to follow because it feels in line with something we're here to give or some way in which we're here to serve. That usually there's a sense of being called somewhere. There's a song playing, like Krishna's flute in bhakti. You know, it calls to us. God calls to us in so many different forms. We say that God has like innumerable avatar forms, and they speak to each soul individually. And so being aware of the images that call us to a soulful life or to a spiritual path, these are the kinds of things that can come through very powerfully when the sun and Neptune come together. At the same time, so too can this kind of intoxicated, gold mad, you know, gold crazy, intoxicated state where we just completely lose it because we become sick with the fantasy of something that is ungrounded, that exploits someone or something, you know, like this. So these energies are very present in the Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I won't give it away in case you want to read it, but the same thing is present where there's a pool that the children come to that's filled, that if you touch it, it turns whatever touches it to gold, to hard gold, though, that sinks and dies. So ironically, the things that we become most obsessive about the literalization or the concretization of some dream or fantasy, and it must become real, this is the thing that will bring me eternal happiness. And, you know, and we're forgetting that we're in a temporary body, right? We're forgetting that we're in a temporary form and that things are impermanent. But we think, no, this thing once and for all, if I can make it manifest, then everything will be fulfilled. We get sick like that. It's like we're touching the water and it's turning us to gold. It's hardening and it's deadening. And it might look beautiful, but it kills something in us. Whereas the spiritualization, it tends to be about an image that motivates us. It's something we're moving toward, but not something we're trying to obtain or possess. It's Krishna's flute isn't something we ever necessarily want to locate and grab. And, you know, we don't want to possess God. We don't want to anything that's that beautiful. There's something about it that moves us. It moves us towards something, but the path itself is what is so beautiful, moving toward that thing, but not trying to literalize and concretize it. So much of our problems stem from saying, well, this is right, or this is good, and this is the thing that we should all do. And then we grip down and we try to concretize the image of goodness or the image of beauty or the image of truth or the image of equality or the image of fairness or the image of virtue or whatever. And we get gold mad about it. We get in this frenzied, hyper virtuous state. And then we concretize and we make a false idol out of the thing, and it kills and it becomes tyrannical. And this is why Neptune, both by Liz Green and Richard Tarnas and so many great modern archetypal psychologists and astrologers have said that Neptune weirdly has this ability to, it's associated with things like genocide, for example, where almost like if you think a little bit of the idea of some golden age that people are trying to get back to, and they want to eliminate anyone or anything, another race that doesn't, you know, that isn't a part of some ideal image of the golden valley of goodness, right? And then let's eliminate anything that doesn't cohere with that image, right? And so there's a way in which the golden image strikes people and things dead if it doesn't conform to it. And that's Neptune. Ironically, Neptune has this way of sometimes wanting to, you know, wash everything away, eliminate, dissolve, drown out anything that doesn't conform to some, you know, sick fantasy that we have about what's good or beautiful or whatever. And that's the danger of Neptune in some ways. Now, on the other hand, again, when you have the Sun and Neptune coming together into a conjunction, you're talking about, and let's just say you're living an inner life. You're aware of the fact that there's nothing in this world you can really hold on to. Everything is temporary. You're passing through. Everything passes. How do you then relate to the world, and what becomes, how do we relate to the soul's need for images, fantasies, desires, longings? Well, this is why, in Krishna Bhakti, we talk a lot about Leela, the play of God. And the images that we look for are those that compel us to follow beauty, truth, and goodness without while staying in a fluid space. We don't want them to concretize into hard gold. We want the gold to be something that moves and lives and breathes through everything and doesn't get lost in the obsession with trying to possess and hold something. And it's weird because most people don't think about Neptune as something that is possessive, because we think about Neptune as something that's very watery and like that. But the thing is that when something is watery and shimmering like a mirage, that the person in the desert wants to grab it, you know, just like, oh, just give me that. So there's something about the mirage-like quality of Neptune that almost compels us to want to grab and possess something to make it real. And spiritual life is made real by following a calling eternally, understanding that the spiritual call to beauty, truth, virtue, goodness, humility, patience, that we're not trying to perfect these things. We're trying to follow these things, follow and see where they go, and trust that they may lead us on eternally. you know, that the and it's so cliched, it's so stupid and cliched, right? But it's like the journey is the destination. That's it. So you don't try to, you don't try to possess the conclusions of your insights. You don't try to concretize, overly concretize the spiritual virtues that you know to be right. You follow them. You follow them, and you stay close to them, and you listen to them in every moment. So they keep leading you onward. And the process of ongoing discovery along the path of a calling or a virtue or an ideal image is what really keeps us home. And this is where the soul starts to feel that, look, but underneath this is a kind of death wish. Well, to possess something is to arrest motion, is to kind of kill it. So it's like, well, the soul sometimes thinks it's sort of like, well, I don't want to exist because it's painful to exist. I can't hold anything and I need something to hold. Well, actually all we're learning how to do is live into our own eternity without trying to clutch and grasp so much. The clutching and grasping is the problem, not being alive, not being in motion. So at any rate, I know that's a little esoteric, but the truth is with the Sun and Neptune that we may follow the music of something higher, of these ideals, but learn to move with them, learn to live with them and breathe with them, as opposed to trying to concretize them into some kind of golden statue. So anyway, I hope that you guys enjoyed this little meditative exploration of the Sun and Neptune. Watch for it in the next week, as we are also seeing Saturn and Uranus in the square. You know, today it felt like a good day to talk about this, as Mercury and Jupiter are also coming together in the sky right now. It's a good time to remember, because Mercury, Jupiter will often represent in Saturn sign the desire to concretize some kind of teaching or lesson or insight or something like that. And with the Sun and Neptune coming together as well, I would say it's a great time to have insights and to learn things, but just make sure that they stay fluid. Don't try to, you know, I was just talking yesterday with a client and friend who, you know, has had some things come up, and she was like, well, what do I do about it? And I was thinking about the I Ching, and was thinking about the transits like this in the sky. And I was saying, just listen, just listen for a little bit, because they'll say this in AA groups, don't make overly big decisions when there's big things happening in your life, big losses, big traumas, big shifts, big insights, anything big, just sit with it for a while. Don't feel like you have to concretize things too quickly, because oftentimes we'll make really impulsive choices in those moments. And what we need to learn to do is to listen, and almost like we have to tune in to the thing that's just happened, and take some time to tune into it. And then naturally, as it starts moving, as the energy starts breaking, then we can follow. Because a lot of the times there's at least two or three layers worth of deeper listening we need to do when something amazing comes up or some insight or some event happens. And right now, especially tempting with the Sun coming into conjunction to Neptune, you're like, let me do something. I'm going to go and make the statue, you know, make this golden statue, concretize it right away, because this is the thing. So hopefully we'll take our time. All right. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great Thursday, and we'll be back with a little bit more tomorrow. I'd love to hear your comments. Were you born with the Sun and Neptune in aspect with one another? What have you learned about that aspect? I would love to hear from you guys about that one. Please leave your comments in the chat box, and we'll see you again tomorrow. All right. Take it easy, everyone. Bye.